You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Recorded and transcribed.
People, yeah. What are you gonna
the people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
get
me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself.
Get
some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me what your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a red disease.
Running like a red disease.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today on this great day. In fact, let me start off right. The first thing I should say is Abargani. And of course, the answer is Kuji Chagalia. Abargani, what's the news? And the answer for the news is Kuji Chagalia, self-determination. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always call our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. There will be programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother, Brother Kwaku. Appreciate you, man. All right. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. This program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Thursdays, from 8 to 10 on Thursdays, Black The Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. Friday, this evening at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Sunday, oh, I keep forgetting this. Let me backtrack, family. Mondays and Wednesdays, our story from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. with Baba West Johnson out of New Orleans. Our story. Mondays and Wednesdays from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. with Baba West Johnson. And then on Sunday, from 5 to 6 on Sunday, Pinckney to Pinckney, activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan on Sunday. And then Sunday evening at 7, once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're going to go right to the Inyasasim. And, of course, get ready for our brother, our guest, Brother Moalimu Mstata with the Pan-African, the Pan-African Federalist Movement in North America. And look forward to our conversation here on Kuji Chagalia. That's what the Pan-African Federalist Movement is about. Self-determination. As you know, I read 3 days on Fridays, today, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. December 26th. You can't integrate the European side into the African side. You become schizophrenic. You got to integrate the old African side, which is our heritage, and the new African side, which is our reality, to produce a new African consciousness. Ashe, Dr. Leonard Jeffries. You cannot become one with death and remain alive any more than any part of your consciousness can become European while your interpretation of reality remains African. Death cannot allow life except as a game, or it is no longer death. That is its nature. It is compelled to murder. That is its genetic imperative. Certainly, it can play with life, even pretend that it is alive. It can even tease the living into confusing their identity with deaths to making murdering them easier, and in fact, collectively move them toward suicidal aspirations. Life cannot remain alive in death's reality because death requires all to be like it, or else it murders them. Death stalks us. It perfectly peers over its horn-rimmed glasses, reading glasses, as it toys with us, studiously measuring every effect of its devastation through our pain-encrusted dysfunctional reactions. Like a cat teasing its next live meal with escape, it taunts us with the actions and imagery of annihilation it would have us believe we can do nothing to stop. Our well-reasoned response has become nothing more than a supplementative complaint and an intercedent diatribe. To be saved from ourselves, we are told we must move closer to the disease's origins. We must come into the cold. Oh, no. Yet we know that only the sun gives life to the leaves as well as to the roots. When the leaves lose their warmth, their heat is no longer transferred to the roots, and the roots, too, long exposed to the cold, will die. We cannot become one with death without dying. Affirm, I am fully integrated with all of my African selves. Affirm, I am fully integrated with all my African selves. December 27th. There are some things wrong with me that loving someone else won't fix. When I fix them, I know love will find me. Phyllis Hyman. Insecure, needy people often want you to be someone who you cannot be because that serves their fragile, tortured egos. It gives them the appearance of strength. They are driven by the need to reduce everyone else beneath their insecurities so that their weaknesses are concealed, and then there is no outward reason for them to admit to any need to change. They hide their need to make you into what supports them, and they do it well. Their fault becomes yours as your heart works to find ways to make them more comfortable through their changing. Be not deceived. Assuredly, know your skills, know your preferences, know these habits and choices which have made you who you are in your heart, and let no one bring them into discomfort. In other words, know your lane and be secure in it. I say, affirm, I fix what is wrong with me. Affirm, I fix what is wrong with me. December 28th, when a brother opens the door to the murderer of his brother, this is the deed unspeakable. Then this deed is unspeakable. J.C. DeGraff Johnson. Urugu has never wanted an invasion against any people without the direct assistance of traitors. Traitors work against earnest warriors, sometimes wittingly, others not. Because of their weaknesses and desperate desire to be seen and known on the front line when others rightfully refuse to acknowledge their existence, they know that their only claim to fame can come through demoralizing and despiritualizing speakers and workers of our revolutionary truth. When they come for you, do not become distracted, unbalanced, or dejected. Do not allow their element of surprise trick you into focusing on their inventions or distractions from your work. Do not allow them to perplex your life with unserved misery. This is their goal. For them, because of a gnawing self-hatred, fear, and weakness of their character, that is the only road to victory they can possibly find as an angry nobodies whose envy restricts their minds to opening the back door to the murders of our people. Continue as you were. Real knows real. At the most personal level, the level at which they pursue you, they came in peace as servants of the people and thereby gained your trust. There will be pain. But know also that what they say is not new to what they think.
There has been no grand awakening against you. There is no end to the negativity people will spew and believe about you when they hate you already. Affirm, I do not betray family. Affirm, I do not betray family. Ashe, brothers and sisters, the Inya Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. All right, family. My guest today is Brother Wally Mstada with the Pan-African Federalist Movement of North America. Brother Mstada, how you doing? Abargani. Abargani? Okay, Brother Mstada, are you there? Abargani. Can we leave your mic open?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, my brother. Go ahead. Abargani.
Oh, Kuji Chagalia.
All right. How you doing today, dear brother?
I'm doing good. Blessed and highly favored, as we say. But still under construction.
Always. Always. It's always a work in progress, right? Yes, sir.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Pan-African Federalist Movement, and we're going to get off into a couple of the Kwanzaa songs by our good brother, Kwame Cobb and Chavin Duka out of Chicago, in their dynamic CD, Seven Principles, which is, oh man, I don't know, Seven Principles, at least got to be 10 years old. Maybe, no, it's older than that. Yeah, but it's great music. It's good because Sister Chavin Duka's voice is just phenomenal, man. It really is. She's a beautiful sister. So what's been happening with the Pan-African Federalist Movement, and what are the objectives?
Well, the overall objective of the Pan-African Federalist Movement, the prime directive, is to bring the United African States into political existence. And we talk about doing that within this decade of the 2020s. That's before December 31st, 2029. And there's a number of events that we're going to be participating in 2025, the Pan-African Congress by the Global African Movement. And then in 2026, the Forum for African Unions and Organizations. And then finally, in 2027, is our Pan-African Federalist Congress. That's where we actually put together the machinery to bring the United African States into political existence. That's the Pan-African main first Congress. When people signed a call for the Pan-African Federalist Movement, they signed in a call to commitment to build the first Congress. And we have a number of things that's going to be done in that regard. Strength in the focus in 2025 is going to be building up the national coordinating committees. Each African country, but let me tell you a little bit about the Pan-African Federalist Movement and its structure. And then I may backtrack with some of the things you were talking about. But the structure of the Pan-African Federalist Movement, we have the Pan-African Congress, which is the governing body, and that's going to be meeting again in 2027. And we met in 2018 in Accra, Ghana, myself and Mamadou Bantou, who's the Secretary General of the Pan-African Federalist Movement in North America. I'm Malima Kwasi Kwayaja Mstada, and I'm the coordinator of the Pan-African Federalist Movement in North America. But in addition to our the North American region, there are eight other regions. There's a region in the Caribbean. There's a Latin American region in North America, which includes all of the people that speak Latin languages, which would mean that Mexico and Brazil. Mexico speaks Spanish, Brazil speaks Portuguese, but they're all in the Latin American region. And then on the continent, we have five. We have the West African region, the Central African region, and the East African region. That's important because we consider that to be the corridor of victory. It's over 1 billion people, and they're Africans of the blood that live there. We here in North America are Africans of the blood. We were kidnapped, forced migrated, and enslaved in the Western Hemisphere. But we came directly from the continent. We weren't, our descendants go back to ancient Egypt and the continent. We weren't we're not recent arrivals such as the Arabs in North America, in North Africa, or Europeans in Southern Africa, who are called Africans of the soil. But the African, the total population on the continent is over, is about 1.5 billion, and well over 1 billion is in the corridor of victory. So in addition to the regions in West Africa, Central Africa, in Eastern Africa, there is a region in Southern Africa, a region in Northern Africa, and then there's a region in Europe. So those make up the primary structures. Now, underneath each of these regional committees are national committees. Each of the countries that's within the region, for example, in West Africa, you'd have Ghana, Guinea, Nigeria, Mali. Each of those countries have a synagogue. Each of those countries have a national committee. And here in North America, we have a national committee in the United States and a national committee in Ghana, in Canada. Bear in mind, the Pan-African Fellows Movement, and when we're looking forward to the United African States, we consider all African countries, the 55 on the continent, but also the African countries in the Caribbean, which would include Haiti, which was one of the first countries to declare its independence, as you know, back with Toussaint Overture in the 1700s. And it includes Jamaica, Trinidad, all of the countries in the Caribbean where there is a majority of African people are considered to be African nations in the Caribbean. Here in North America, there's 50 million of us in the United States who are de facto an African nation. And we would be treated the same as any other African nation in terms of representation in the United African States and in terms of representation at the first Pan-African Congress. We are sociologically and culturally a nation. That's been said as early as Martin Delaney in 1852 when he said that we are a nation within a nation. So that's a fact. I flew from Harlem to Washington, D.C., to Watson, California, you see some commonalities culturally and sociologically that let you know that we're a nation, but we don't have sovereignty. And we weren't negotiated into the Constitution of the United States back in 1787. We were amended into the Constitution after the Civil War with the 13th Amendment, which ended in our enslavement, the 14th Amendment, which granted us citizenship, and then the 15th Amendment, which gave us citizenship. But we weren't there in the beginning. Even though we made up one-fifth of the population in 1787, there wasn't any, and there were people quite capable of advocating for us, Benjamin Banneker, Richard Allen, but we weren't at the Constitutional Convention to speak for the interests of the African nation. You know, Mrs. Alexander Hamilton's wife used to talk about Southern Africa, the southern parts of the United States as being Little Africa. So we were recognized to some extent. Most of us were enslaved at that time. And you made a good point earlier, by the way, Brother Oshie, that we're not slaves, we were enslaved.
Exactly, we were captive.
We were captive. Yeah. Like I said, we were kidnapped, forced migrated, and then enslaved here. So that's how we, you know, got here. And anyway, so that, and in Canada, there's 1.5 million people of African ancestry, and that would constitute the African nation in Canada. So we, our two national committees are that. The reason why I'm talking about them is because one of the major thrusts in the next year is beginning to develop these national coordinating committees. They're going to be reaching out to national organizations, national Black organizations, Pan-African organizations, asking them if they would like to be part of a coalition which is committed to bringing the United African States into political existence, and asking them to be part of an effort to represent us at the Pan-African Fellows Congress, as I mentioned, is going to take place in 2027. Once we hold what we're going to be calling a constituent assembly, these national coordinating committees will be transformed into national preparatory committees, and the regional coordinating committee will be a regional preparatory committee. Just as we already have an International Preparatory Committee, the IPC, which came into existence after the pre-Congress in 2018 that took place in Accra. So anyway, that's a long general introduction. I like to tie it into the principle of Kuji Chagaleya, which is to define for ourselves, to name ourselves, to create for ourselves, and to speak for ourselves, instead of being defined, named, created for, and spoken for by others. That's according to Dr. Milano Karanga, who who was the founder of Kwanzaa back in 1966. So needless to say that, you know, once Africa is united and is a nation, it's over 1.5 billion people, we will be able to deal with all of the powers that be. And as you know, what's happening in Africa right now, the Chinese got their foot in everything. They're negotiating with all these independent, 55 independent nations, as opposed to one federal government representing the whole 1.5 billion people. And it's a whole different thing when they could pick each nation off. But once the government, the federal government of the United African States comes into political existence, we will absorb all of the debt of the individual countries. Similar to what happened in underneath Alexander Hamilton in the United States, when all of the debt of this individual states was absorbed by the new federal government. And then we could renegotiate with China from a position of strength, with Europe from a position of strength, on how and if we will pay that debt. And we could do it from, and also it would make up much less of our economy than it does of the small economies of the existing African nations. So we could renegotiate that. We could talk about reparations from a position of strength, as opposed to like individual groups. And that's in keeping with the principle of Kuji Chagalia. I have in front of me the book on Kwanzaa that was written by Milano Karanga, and I could read more into that, but I think I should stop there. I think I've said enough for the beginning.
No, brother, you're on point. But one of the things that, you know, why I remember the Pan-African Federalist movement, the idea of one Africa, the underlining theme of Kwanzaa is unity. Unity. And because we don't have unity, we are manipulated, undermined, and made a fool of consistently and taken advantage of because we don't have unity. And, of course, the European would do everything in its power to prevent us from having unity. You know, I had on my program Wednesday Brother Mickey Dean, who is with the National NBUF, you know, National Black United Front. And he sends me a lot of good stuff periodically. And he sent me a very good, excuse me, family. Let me go here then. A piece that he sent me was on, I'm sorry, I'm taking my, trying to find it right away. But I'll find it definitely after the break. But it was a good piece on talking with this brother from Tunisia and the problems and the issues that we have and why we're constantly divided and so forth. And I'd like to send that to you because the reality is that, you know, these 54 separate countries, they're not sovereign. They're 54 mouthpieces for, you know, there are 54 mouthpieces of the brother of the people who took that land from us from the beginning. They're neo-colonialists. And these men who are speaking are European trained. And as a consequence, when you understand and you know the wealth of Africa, why we are still physically looking poor. Africa is the richest land on the planet. Still, after hundreds of years of European rape and plunder, Africa still has more wealth than anywhere else. And then when you see Europe, when you see them riding around in a gold carriage, when you see them sitting in front of millions of bars of gold bullion, when you see the crown of jewels and so forth, all of that is stolen. All of that is theft. And so, you know, I agree with you wholeheartedly. The only way that we can make this world understand our position is that we as African people are united. No matter, yes, I'm Nigerian, or yes, I may be Ashanti or Igbo or Zulu or whatever it is, but more importantly, I am African.
Absolutely.
I am African. Yes, I live in the United States or in Central America or the Caribbean or South America. Yeah, I live in Brazil because there's more of us in Brazil than any other country except Nigeria. But I'm not, y'all count Brazil, but I'm African. I'm African. That's why I always said, always put the African last and whatever we are first, because Africa is the noun. The noun denotes a person, place, or thing. What comes in front of the noun is the adjective. What kind of thing is it? Okay? So I'm an American African. If I was in Brazil, I'd be a Brazilian African, Caribbean African, Ghanaian African, Nigerian African. We are Africans. And the more that we close ranks, pull our resources, we become strong. Because if we're talking about reparations, I mean, you know, it's a messed up thing here in the States with reparations. You got ADOS and their foolishness. And then you got other programs, you know, even within COBRA. We need to understand that reparations, the root word is repair. That doesn't mean, I mean, I feel bad about some families who have been poor for generations. And I feel that. And they definitely need some alleviation. But it ain't about giving you some money so you can get a new house, a new car, a wardrobe. You know, it's about reestablishing ourselves as Africans on this planet with dignity and respect, and then to speak that. And of course, the monetary money that we get will be about building schools, roads, highways, ports, hospitals on the continent. Because we sure in hell can't do it here. That's why, I mean, I was a member of a Republic of New Africa. But I realized, no, you can't. These people are so evil. You know, you look at the history. That's Malcolm says, look, of all our studies, look at the history. History rewards our research. Look at the history. Everywhere. I just seen a piece on the CBS News today. The brother, who's Brother Nate Burleson, his wife is from Tulsa. And they went back to Tulsa to talk with their auntie. There's a feature on CBS mm-hmm. News. And they're talking about the massacre. You know,
1923, I believe.
Yep, yeah. 1921. All the things that they lost. You know? Mm-hmm. And that's the reality, just like Rosewood. Them crackers was looking mm-hmm. for something to vamp on Rosewood. And then mm-hmm. they did it and wiped it off the map. Elaine, Arkansas. I could go on. Allentown in L.A. I believe those crackers poisoned that water. I believe it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying, so it can't happen here because we're living in the belly of the beast, so to speak. United States is the military arm of white supremacy. They have bases all around the world. All around the world. So if they need to bust a cap in your ass, they can do it within a half hour. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so given that reality, you know, we need to come together and unite and then bring it for the – I don't know if we got to talk to the World Court and United Nations. Hell, all of those are corrupt. We'll just state the fact. We'll just state the fact. And so, you know, I'm going to tell you, it's a shame, but I applaud the Pan-African Fellows Movement for pushing and promoting the idea of the unity. But it's a shame that here today, you know, I gave a talk at the Kwanzaa about 5 years ago on Kuji Chagalia, you know, on that principle, on that date. And I stated that we're no closer to, you know, self-determination today than we were when we started in 1966, when Kwanzaa started. In fact, one could argue we're probably closer to that then because of the Black Power movement than we are today. But we have been consistently manipulated and undermined and divided, you know, because this society has always thrown crumbs out at us, and our leadership is always, because it's religious, it's steeped in Christianity, and of course they believe that the government is going to do right. They've been hoodwinked, bamboozled, as Malcolm would say, led astray, because they ain't gonna never do right. It's not in them to do right. And so the main thing is, you know, Brother Instada, the Exodus in the Bible never happened. There was a symposium about 30 years ago. I never forget it, because one of the people who were there was Shekama, Neferama of Alcera Seth Society. And I read what he said about that conference on the Exodus, until finally admitted that it never happened. Well, let me say this, dear brother. Exodus has to happen. We must get the hell up out of here and throughout the diaspora and go home. If you feel comfortable where you are because of the, you know, your job, your house, you know, your kids going to school there and so forth, fine. But for those of us who understand, for the future of African people, we have to go home. There has to be an exodus globally for Africans to return home.
So, yeah, you said a lot.
I did. I apologize, man. I just went off. So I'm sorry. Go ahead, my brother.
No, that's okay.
You my guest, man. I appreciate that. And I apologize about that, man. But, you know, I tell you, when I look at, in fact, Kwanzaa will be 60 years old. So Kwanzaa.
Next year.
Yep. 2026. Kwanzaa will be, I submit that we must have a conference or a gathering or some way to look at Kwanzaa in 60 years, where we are as a people. Because I believe in the Kwanzaa principles. I believe in them. They should be instilled in our everyday lives. In fact, at the end of the program, I'm going to do a piece on Kwanzaa, talking about the seven principles, how we can instill them into our everyday lives to prepare ourselves to be better people, you know. But I look at that as a rallying cry for us to really seriously look at Kwanzaa. Here now, 60 years old, where are we? You know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, like I said, you said a lot of different things, which are all of which are important. I should have taken some notes so I could respond to each of them, but let me talk overall. I'm 77. I was a part of the nationalist movement back in the 60s. I was a member of the Congress of Racial Equality. In fact, I was the director of political affairs of CORE. From 1971 to 1975, that was the time that CORE was a nationalist Pan-Africanist organization, and we built our foundation on Marcus Garvey, the right excellent Marcus Garvey, who was the duly elected first president of provisional president of Africa in August of 2020. And we also looked to Martin Delaney, he's the one who's first person to say to Africa for the Africans.
I say.
Which Martin Garvey added those at home and those abroad. He was also the first person to say that that we constitute a nation within a nation in his book in 1852. He traveled to Africa, to what is now Nigeria, and in fact had a contract with the eight of the various groups there to allow for Africans in America to migrate back. So we look at him, and we also looked at Edward Blyden, who actually was from the Caribbean, spent a little bit of time in the United States, and then moved over to Liberia, in Sierra Leone, where he be proceeded to be a Pan-Africanist over there. So we, in core, we looked at those three people, but there were other nationalist groups. So we believed that that Africa, that we are in fact an African nation where we stand. You know, just like Indonesia has over 1,700 islands, but it's one nation. So we believe, yeah, and we still do, and I still do believe that, that we are an African nation where we stand. And Africa is where African people are. So there was the Republic of New Africa that wanted to do the five states in the South, physically moved us there. And then there was Milano Karanga, and he focused on the cultural aspect of it. And he believed that, you know, without the culture being straight, that there couldn't be any liberation. So it's interesting that 60 years later, we haven't made much progress, concrete, touchable progress in terms of gaining greater sovereignty for the African nation within the United States. I mean, we, in core at that time, we saw we were struggling to redefine the Supreme Court decision in terms of focusing on the fact that it was desegregation, not integration, and that it was the power monopoly that made it, it was the evil part of it in terms of African people, that whether they controlled us separately or whether they controlled us in an integrated situation. And we were saying that the best way to desegregate would be to break the power monopoly, allow us to have our own independent school districts in our own communities. We can negotiate and have relationships with the other school districts, but allow us to have a breaking the power monopoly. We saw that as the most important element. And that will also is going to lead to eventually gaining control over other elements in our community. And then eventually we negotiate the Constitution of the United States and have a new contract where we would be recognized with some degree of sovereignty. That was our vision then. Not much has happened over the last 60 years with that. Republic of New Africa was talking about the five states. Nothing in reality, in physical terms, has happened. But ironically, the cultural piece of Kwanzaa is now celebrated by millions of people. So that may be, in some ways, the lasting legacy of that era. I remember I was in Africa, in Ghana, in 1996, and I bought a Kanora that was made in Ghana, and I still have it. It has the Jeneme symbol in the middle of it. Jeneme was in a Akan language in southern Nigeria, which means only God, there's no higher force than God. We all yield to God, and it's a symbol.
That's right.
That's in the middle of my Kanora that I got that was actually made in Ghana. So you can see that Kwanzaa is now universal. You know, so it's one thing that we celebrated all over, definitely here in North America, but also as you can see, I got that from Ghana, in parts of Ghana. So we need to build on that cultural aspect, but we also need to, at this point politically, and I'm a political scientist by training, as difficult as it is, and I could cite some of the difficulties, but I believe that the first and foremost thing should be the political unification of the continent of Africa in the global African community. Which would be the global African nation would include the 55 states, as well as us in the Caribbean, as well as us in North America and Canada, as well as us in South America, and wherever African people are. That would be part of, so it would be a global nation. And I believe that once that's established, it would even put us in a better position to renegotiate the Constitution of the United States in terms of the interests of the African nation that exists within it. And that'll probably take place in the 2060s, because we tend to get active in the 60s, whether it be a civil war, civil rights movement, a civil war in 1960s, the civil rights movement and black power movement in the 1960s. So let's get this global African nation into political existence, and that'd be a backdrop for us here domestically in the 60s when we renegotiate the Constitution to recognize politically that we are a nation within a nation. That's theoretical, and it's partly coming out of where we came. But right now, and also some of the other things you talked about, like I was reminded of Amilcar Cabral, when he said that when the Europeans came, they took us out of our history and into their history. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what's happened. You got to bear in mind that African people, for the overwhelming majority of our existence, have been a world power. Once Africa is united, it will reemerge as a world power. But it's not. It's going to reemerge. The last 500 years has been an aberration in our history. It's not our normal condition. We're living in the middle of it, so we tend to be overwhelmed by it. But before the European came in, as he did, we had power. You talked about some of that in the beginning of your show. Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Zimbabwe. Just for starters, and we haven't even gone back to ancient Egypt, which history is measured in millenniums and thousands of years. Mm-hmm. And for thousands of years, and we've done things that these people still can't figure out. I mean, Garvey talked about the buried treasures in ancient Egypt, which we still haven't even figured out, how the pyramids were built and all that. A lot of the foundation of everything. History didn't start with the Europeans, it started in Africa. In fact, Europeans went into Egypt to learn various things, whether it be Pythagoras or other people. So we have a long history and we need to be able to see ourselves that way. You know, we talk about the African New Year, and this would be 62-64 by the African New Year, not 2025, 62, exactly. 64. I mean, you look at history like
That's right.
You could see that the last 500 years is just an aberration, a dip down on an idea, but our goal is to reemerge as a world power and return to our traditional greatness, as I said in Kwanzaa. Mm-hmm. And that traditional greatness I've just spoken to, you know, so we have, you know, we have to be of that mindset to recognize that. We have to be consistent, understanding the time span, that we're not just confined here to this. The United States is a relatively new nation in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, it has the oldest living constitution. Sure. And we may want to look at that constitution to some extent, take the good and the bad out of it when we're looking at, when we're building it from a political science perspective, when we're building on the constitution for United African States. But it's less than 250 years old, you know. Whereas our history again is measured in millenniums. I mean, and it's a good point you also make earlier when you talked about how we define ourselves. Like within the context of the United States, we call ourselves African Americans, but in a global sense, we are American Africans. You're absolutely right. In the global sense, because the African is a noun. That's who we are. There are Ghanaian Africans. There are Nigerian Africans.
Exactly.
And there are, and there's American Africans. But but as a whole, the key thing we need to remember, that the key phrase is Africans.
Mm-hmm.
And Kwame Nkrumah in 1963 at the founding of the Organization of African Unity, which, by the way, he went there expecting the group to emerge with laying the foundation for United African States, the Union of African States, as he was calling it at that time. But he was very disappointed. But he, part of his speech, he said that we're gathered here not as Nigerians, not as Ghanaians, not as Tanzanians, but as Africans. You know, and that was the point he was making, that we need to identify ourselves as Africans. That's the most important thing. Yeah. We need to see ourselves, not as a member of an ethnic group. I don't like to say tribal, but not as a member of an ethnic group.
Right. There were two groups that were present there.
Yeah, the Casablanca and the Monrovia group.
Exactly. in a constant blind group was, wanted to say, yeah, let's.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. No.
Yeah. One was basically Kwame Nkrumah was with the Casablanca group. That basically was the Federalists. Mm-hmm. They wanted to bring about the United African States almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other group was the Casablanca group was the Confederates. They wanted to do it gradually,
and over time.
They talked about reason.
Yeah.
And it was a philosophical difference. It's very interesting between Nyerere and Kwame Nkrumah. And Nyerere, to his credit, recites and talks about that mm-hmm. at his speech in 1997 in Accra,
right.
at the 40th anniversary of Ghana's independence. Mm-hmm. And he says, by this time, he's already been president of president of Tanzania.
Right.
There's been a 37-year period from the independence of Ghana from March of 1957 to Mandela's ascension to the presidency, his first black president of South Africa in May of 1994. So it's about 37 years in which time a whole bunch of countries became independent, quote unquote independent. It's really flag independence. That's another point you were making.
Exactly.
The sovereignty.
That's right.
The sovereignty is not total. Because it's still dependent on the various European countries, mm-hmm. the various people that colonized it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's flag independence.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Nyerere said that in that same speech, he said that Nkrumah wanted to unite the entire continent. He wanted to end the balkanization immediately. I thought that we should do it regionally. And he talked about how he talked about wanted to do it with Ghana and with Kenya and Uganda and he thought that it should be done piecemeal like by regions.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, "I was wrong and Nkrumah was right."
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's a heavy statement for a 75-year-old man. He's looking back on the history of the entire freedom movement.
Mm-hmm.
He also says that the Organization of African Unity. It's failed miserably on the question of African unity. That's Nyerere. Again, it's not me talking. It's somebody who was actually in the forefront of the movement and the leader.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying it failed miserably. He said it succeeded in liberating the African countries, again, giving them flag independence. But when Kwame Nkrumah left, we completely dropped the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then he concludes by saying that without unity, there is no future for
that's
Africa.
That's right. Thank you.
And that's and that's again Julius Nyerere speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, that's all of them. They eventually, when they really open their minds and open their eyes, and you know, they begin to see the truth of that. You know, just like Du Bois, you know, what Du Bois did. You know, many things that he did were unconscionable because of his dogging out Marcus Garvey, dogging out even Booker T. Washington. You know, and mm-hmm. believing in a talented 10th. Until he finally realized that was some bullshit, and then he, you know, went to Ghana, and you know, you can go to his center. He's buried in Ghana, you know.
Mm-hmm. I've been there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Me too. And he's there. Mm-hmm. So there was mistakes mm-hmm. made by us, and sometimes, unfortunately, we apologize later. But damn, it really regressed us. You know, had we been open mm-hmm. to it, you know, where would we be, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So we're going to be able to take a break here in a minute, Brother Mstada. I really appreciate the Pan-African Federalist Movement because this program, and that's why I've always invited you guys on. In fact, I told Mama Nabantu as well and Brother Sam Collins, you know, you guys can come on at whatever time that is to talk about, because this program is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. For African people, our motto is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify
mm-hmm.
or die. So mm-hmm. every Monday, Wednesday, mm-hmm. and Friday from that time frame of 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., this is what we talk about. You know, it is from
and
our
Garvey
perspective.
And Garvey talked about that.
Yes.
Garvey said he was looking ahead to the next 100, 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
Garvey was predicting that there was going to be another world war, and his whole thing was that Africa needed to be unified at that time so that we could emerge from that war in unity, because wars take on things. And he talked about we have to basically, this is my words, to get our act together or we will die. That's what he said.
And he's
we have to get our act together or we will die. And then, and again, if you look at the world right now, the world isn't waiting for us.
That's right.
China is in almost all of those 55 countries. And when you go there, you can see it. There, you talked about the water being polluted in these various parts of the United States. My wife is from Ghana. She was born in Ghana, in northern Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear from my family there about how the water, which was normally pure, is all like polluted now. You can't drink from it because the Chinese are going in and grabbing the gold and then just leaving, it's not without regard to the environment, you know. So so we need to, there's so much to be.
So, yeah, no, let me say this. It is our responsibility as well. Yes, the brothers and sisters on the continent and many of them who have been made to believe that somehow they're better because they're still African. We're not, because we've been colonized. I mean, we've been enslaved, and many of us, you know, look like me, you know. But damn it, my heart and my mind is as African as any African, you know. Damn how everybody looks.
You know, we are Africans. There's ignorance on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean.
And that's,
but make no mistake about it. Yeah. Africa is where African people are.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's been done. That's been done intentionally. That's why I'm saying that when we act that way and then we say to ourselves, oh, man, we're our own worst enemy. I hate that. No, we're not. No, we're not.
Mm-hmm.
The enemy is the European, is the Caucasian, and he has affected the world, because all the other parts of the world also look at us with disdain and hatred.
Mm-hmm.
They look at us.
Sometimes, unfortunately, even people on the African continent look at us that way until they understand what the real situation is.
Yeah.
But you know, my Queen Mother Moore, back in the 60s and 70s, I had the honor of meeting her on some publications. And she always said something that, and Malcolm said it in another way, but he said that if a cat had kittens in the oven,
that's right,
they wouldn't be biscuits.
Exactly. Don't make them biscuits.
Malcolm said that sitting at a dinner table doesn't make you a diner.
That's right.
You know? Yeah. So you know, both of them are pointing to the fact that we are an African people. That's
African
what we, people.
Bottom line.
50,000 of us marched at the first African Liberation Day march, and I was there in 1972. And Wusu Sudaki was there, and you know, we were there. The leader of Congress, Ray Kennedy, spoke. Mama Baraka spoke. But the theme was that we are an African people.
I say.
And that's what we were saying. We are an African people. And we were coming out strong, you know. And it's important. Sometimes I think I talk with brother aunt students and activists at Syracuse University. We started the Student Africa. We were founders. Founding members. We didn't start. We were founding members of the African American Cultural Society. The Student African Society. Student African Society, SAS, and we were the prime movers of the Martin Luther King Library and of the Black Studies program, or the African Studies program. He and I were definitely the prime movers for those two programs.
Right on.
But sometimes it's like the people we forgot the memo that we are an African people, and people are trying to do all sorts of things, you know, that are off where we were trying to move then, you know. So anyway, but we got a lot of work to do. Somebody said if it was easy, it would have already been done.
Yeah.
We got to remember we have to face the truth. Amaka Cabral again, tell no lies, claim no easy victories.
That's right.
But at the same time, we got to struggle toward victory, and we have to. Garvey was talking about United States of Africa back in the 20s, and Nkrumah in 1958. Among other times, he said that this is a decade of African independence. Independence now, tomorrow, the United States of Africa. That was a vision. Now we have the obligation
to make it a reality.
You know, I intend to be in Africa. We don't know where yet. Before this decade is out, to see the first permanent president of Africa, duly elected president of Africa. Garvey was the duly elected first provisional president of Africa in 1920. And I recognize that as a legitimate election because This organization had well over 6 million people in 40 coming from 40 different countries, and they had a convention in Madison Square Garden was an entire month of August. That's where they established the Red, Black, and Green. I forgot how many thousands of people were there, but it was a lot of people.
Over 20,000 people. We can't get 500. Over 20,000
people.
So that
was a legitimate election. They came from 40 different countries.
Yes.
So that was a legitimate election of a people who were under siege. Mm-hmm. Africa was totally colonized, and we were completely desegregated. So to be able to gather that many people in Madison Square Garden and then establish the Red, Black, and Green, elect the first president of Africa. That was a duly election. But now we got to move toward a permanent thing. And the point I'm making in terms of Garvey and Nkrumah and even Nyerere is that those are visions. We have a responsibility in this generation
to make it a reality.
And the rest of the world isn't waiting for us
to bring
that United African States into physical existence.
I say.
And you and I, Brother Osi, need to plan to be in Africa sometime before December 31st, 2029.
That's right.
To see the first president of Africa, the first president, duly elected president, raise her or his hand to take the oath of office. By the way, at that point, the job of the Pan-African Fellows Movement would have been done, because our mission is to bring the United African States into political existence. Once it's into existence, our job is done. Now, we have a coalition of other organizations that have their own missions who are committed to that particular philosophy, that particular goal on a mission, so they're coming together around that. They will continue to have their mission, because we're not asking organizations to surrender their mission and what they're about. We're asking them to join us in a coalition to bring about the United African States. So once the United African States comes into existence, the Pan-African Fellows Movement ceases to exist, because our mission has been achieved. But the organizations that make up the coalitions continue to do what they've been doing. And now they have a global African context in which to do it in.
Okay.
And a lot of the things we're trying to do will be even easier to do at this point.
I'm going to take a break. And when I come back from the break, I'm going to play two pieces from Seven Principles, Umoja and Kujichagulia.
Great.
And then when we come back, I'm going to make some announcements of Kwanzaas that are happening, and then we're going to further the conversation with Brother Mwalimu Mstada of the Pan-African Federalist Movement here in North America. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and Black Talk Radio Network. Network.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Oh. different name, and this has served to just confuse us. When all is said and done, to be one's our revolution. We never stand alone, 'cause unity's our resolution. Share one mind through a vision of our future, while we're holding hands to form a circle around our motherland. From all around the world, she is calling home her children. One mind will take us there, and we will celebrate our union.
Share the truth of our history. You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Once again, brothers, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. The Seven Principles, brother and sister out of Chicago, Illinois, Kwame Cobb and Sister Chavin Duke, a beautiful voice. I can't wait to you hear Imani. Man, she does Imani. But we're going to do all the principles. We'll make sure you hear those when you listen to this program. Also, too, we have some announcements on Kwanzaa. Before I get back to my guest, Brother Mwalimu Nstata, with the national, with the Pan-African Federalist Movement, North America. Brother Ted Lusk, they have a Kwanzaa tomorrow. Selma to Montgomery, celebrate Kwanzaa with us Saturday, the 28th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., Montgomery Interpretive Center, 1521 Harrison Way in Montgomery, Alabama. Let me see, Brother Ted, are you there?
I'm here, Bubba. I'm here. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brother Ted Lusk. Always a pleasure, man, because you provide so much, man. Just quickly tell us about what's going to go on with the Kwanzaa presentations in Montgomery, Alabama.
From 1 to 3 p.m., this is actually a kind of a first on the campus of Alabama State University. And so there's a sister here who's very strong activist and strong unifying individual is going to take hold of this program and just try to bring people together and see where we go from here. And hopefully you'll keep me on because I have a question for Mwalimu a little bit later.
Oh, for sure. All right, my brother. You know I will. Thanks a lot, Brother Lass.
Yep.
All right. And, of course, the Kwanzaas that are happening here in the Atlanta area. Okay. And yesterday was Umoja at the new Black Wall Street from 1 to 6. And, of course, Mama Nabantu is there. And then, of course, also the Kwanzaa at the Art Exchange from 3 to 7 last night. And, of course, the same brother. Yes, sir. He's doing the Kwanzaa today at, excuse me, family, the New Black Wall Street. I'm going to be there shortly as soon as I get done with this. So, because they're starting off at 2 o'clock. And our Sarasota Society, Each One Teach One alumni. Also, too, we have Mama Nabantu, of course, putting it on. And then a Kwanzaa presentation at the Shrine of the Black Madonna this evening. And Brother Kenneth Zaki, who was at the Art Exchange last night, he will be there. He's hosting that one tonight at the Shrine of the Black Madonna in the West End. I'm Ralph Dibbitt Abernathy. All of these things are free, family. All of these are free. And then there's also another Kujichagulia from the Pan-African Council, excuse me, the Pan-African Coalition at the Griot Museum from 5 to 8 with WADU, which is the Worldwide African Diaspora Union, celebrating 20 years. UNIA, the Organization of Marcus Garvey, and ASCAC, the Association for the Study of African Civilizations, and their event is from 5 to 8 at the African Afrocentric Museum and Cultural Center on 337 Dragon Place in Southwest in Atlanta. And there's some more events upcoming. And tomorrow, the 28th, well, here once again is the Shrine today on the 27th. That's from 5 to 7 at the Shrine of the Black Madonna, Brother Kenneth Zaki. And then tomorrow, Ujima Kwanzaa celebration at the New Black Wall Street. And then Mama Tamu Kinyama has a presentation, A Taste of Diaspora. And that's going to be at the New Black Wall Street as well. And then the First African celebration, First African, the church, First African, located 5197 Salem Road in Stonecrest, Georgia. First African. The program begins at 5 from 5 to 6. There's a dinner portion of it from 5 to 6. And then there's the program itself and all the things that it's going to entail. So First African, located 5197 Salem Road in Stonecrest. And that'll be from 6 to 9 p.m. is the program. So those are the things that are happening. And I know I'm going to give a mention to my brothers and sisters in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Brother Claiborne Benson last night. There were some other programs, and my lady, she sent me the information. I can't put my hand on it right now. But I know that it begins with Brother Claiborne and it ends with Sister Josephine Hill at the African-American Women's Center with the Kamaru Ye Imani. In fact, that's interesting because in the Kwanzaa, they usually say the feast happens on Kumba. But Milwaukee, we changed that many years ago with, say, this, you know, the feast is called the Kamaru. And so we have the Kamaru Ye Imani and at the African-American Women's Center, just a big feast there and good program. And my brother Tay Jumala Omolaboni will probably be doing his thing. Love me some Tay Ju. All right, let's get back to the discussion. Let's get back to the discussion with Brother Mwali Muim, starter of the Pan-African Federalist Movement. We got some bunch of callers on the line.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you well. Go ahead, dear brother.
Just want to say a few small things before we get back into the conversation in earnest. You mentioned the Kwanzaa celebrations that are taking place in Atlanta. Atlanta is like the Mecca, the Black Mecca And I'm proud of my daughter, who's now going to Clark Atlanta University.
She's okay. All right on. Well, listen, man, when you come down here to visit, so let me know.
So we can, I will. Been down there several times.
Okay.
But there's Kwanzaa programs going across. Remember, again, we are a nation within a nation. There are thousands of different communities, but it's all part of the African nation within the United States. And so there's Kwanzaa programs going on in Harlem and Watts.
Right.
In Detroit, in Texas, South Carolina, all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we have one down here in Flagler County in Florida that's taking place tomorrow from 12 to 5. It's being done at the African American Cultural Center. That's a center that was created by the African American Cultural Society, which is started here in 1991. And they have an annual Kwanzaa program. So tomorrow, they're having theirs from 12 to 5 o'clock.
Right on. Now, where's that at again in Florida? Where's that at in Florida?
It's the African American Cultural Society Center. It's in Palm Coast, Florida.
Palm Coast. Okay, Palm Coast, Florida. Okay.
Yeah. Within Flagler County.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just one of many, but you were mentioning some, so I just want to mention that one. I'll be there, and my daughter will be lighting the candle for Umoja.
All right.
To start the ceremony off.
Okay.
Also, people, names, we keep saying different names, and I mentioned that my name is Bubba, which is a father or elder, but Malimo Kwasi Kwayaja Msada, which is that Pan-African name that I've taken on, and it comes from different parts of Africa, and it describes, and it's not just arbitrary, it describes different aspects of me. Malimo is Swahili, and it means teacher, and I've always been said that I was a teacher. My last paying job was an adjunct professor at the University of Albany, and it's also kind of like an honor of Malimo Julius Nyerere, who was a teacher by profession.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Swahili, East Africa. And Kwasi is a Khan from southern part of Ghana. And Kwasi means born on Sunday. And I was, in fact, born on a Sunday. And then I put a dash, Kwayaja, which is comes from northern Ghana, the Kakumba group, which is where my wife is from. And that means one who by destiny has missed his grandfather. And my grandfather, William Brown, passed almost 9 months before I was born. So it was almost as if by destiny. My father, in his first year of marriage, lost his father and gained his son.
Mm.
So that's Kwayaja. And then Msada is a name I was actually given. I had to go down and take a kola nut and then come up. I was given it in Senegal in 1995. At the time, they told me it was just a popular name. But I've since learned from Brother Jomé, who's the Secretary General of the Pan-African Fellows Movement. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that also. But that it means one firstborn son has finally come, something to that effect, and I am the firstborn son. So Malimo Kwasi Kwayaja Msada has that definite, has a specific meaning. And it's all coming from East, West Africa. And Msada, by the way, is Vola. Is Bola from Senegal. So it's all coming from language, African languages.
I see.
And also want to I want to mention the website, if you let me, of the Pan African Fellows Movement in North America, and people could go there. And I would encourage you to go there to learn more about the Pan African Fellows Movement in North America. There's links to the global website of the Pan African Fellows Movement. So that website is www.pafm-northamerica.org. www.pafm-northamerica.org. And that website, you could sign the call. You can sign our petition. A petition is a group that we want the masses of African people to get involved in. Basically, it just says that you support the idea of the United African States. And then you want millions of people. That's not asking you to do any work. Just you support the idea. The call actually asks you to get involved if you believe in certain specific things, like the fact that Africa is shouldn't be a liability. It should be an asset. You support Amaka Cabral, I mean, not Amaka Cabral, but you do, yeah, Amaka Cabral is good, but you support statements of Kwame Nkrumah, Malcolm X, and boy, I'm black, the main, boy, who is the, I'm blocking on his name right now for some, which is a shame, but.
Who is that?
The brother from Senegal, who is Diop.
Oh, no. Oh, shout out to Diop. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, the great work that he did. Yes. No doubt.
Absolutely. Yeah. So they have a quote from him in the call and says, do you support the philosophy of these people? And if you do, they ask you to actually get involved. Mm-hmm. So that's a commitment. You could sign on to that on the website. And you could also do what Brother Oshie and myself and Mama Dibantu and other people who do. You could take a further commitment by becoming a card-carrying member of the Pan-African Fellows Movement by making a monthly regular financial commitment of $12, and you're actually supporting the movement. So you can do all of that on our website. Plus, it has it's connected to a number of related websites. You could look at the offices of the Pan-African Fellows Movement in North America. You could look at the there's a different links to other related websites, among them being the global website for the Pan-African Fellows Movement. So I'd encourage you to go to the website. And again, it's www.pafm-northamerica.org.
I see.
Okay, so I just wanted to say that from the beginning. And there's some other things I want to mention, but I could mention them as we go along.
Okay. I'm going to open up the phone lines for those who want to get in on this conversation. Hit star twice or dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. See, we have Brother Irv. Good afternoon, Brother Irv.
Good afternoon, Baba Oshie. How are you? And how is your guest?
Brother Mstata?
Baba Oshie.
Yes, sir. Hey, great. I'm here.
Brother, thank you for coming on. And I'm listening intently. Because I actually wrote down www.pafn-northamerica.org.
And M is in Mary, P is in Peter, A is in Africa, F is in Frank, or and then M is in Mary. PAFN, the Pan African Fellows Movement. It's the abbreviation of the Pan African Movement. -northamerica.org.
And that's why I said that again, because I wanted to make sure I got it right, but I wanted to say it again for those who didn't hear it on the air. And we can't say it enough, because the more people that join this organization and organizations like this, the stronger we become as African people. And that's my whole thing, is that we understand that we have more in common than we do apart. We have more in common. There's more American Africans in the United States that think like we think, but maybe not know where to go to be around people of like mind. And as listening to you speak, I can hear that you have so much to say, and you understand. You got to give people little bites of the apple, because if you give them to you to overwhelm them, then they tend to shy away. I know I do, because it's just too much. But you're feeding me a little bit at a time, and thank you, brother, so much for doing that. I don't have any questions for you. I just want to listen and learn. And I am the firstborn son also, so we do have something in common. And I also was born on a Sunday, so okay. I'm listening intently, brother. Please keep doing what you're doing. I'm going to the website. I'm going to be a card-carrying member. And Baba Oshie knows if I say it, I'm going to do it, because if I wasn't going to do it, I wouldn't say it. I'm not trying to impress nobody. I'm not trying to make a whole bunch of friends. But what I'm trying to do is to make sure that our people can accomplish our self-determination, our sovereignty, our liberation. And those things are important to me. So thank you, brother. Thank you for taking my call, Baba Oshie.
All right, brother. Yes, appreciate you.
Brother. And maybe I should call you Kwasi Amsada now.
I love it.
Yes, sir. All right, brother.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your support, and I appreciate your enthusiasm, and please pass the word.
Right on.
You know, because ultimately this is a grounds up mass movement. You know, at some point we are going to be on the continent doing a referendum and actually having people from the ground up push for United African States to ratify the Constitution, to have a referendum prior to that. And a lot of the African heads of states don't necessarily have a vested interest in bringing the United African States into political existence.
And they need to go.
Kwame Nkrumah ran into that in 1963, and in that same speech in 1997, Julius Nyerere made reference to that. He said he made a joke that that he got on the plane and he overheard some people saying that at least I'm returning back to my country and I'm still head of state. And we, again, with the United African States, the various heads of states currently would become governors. They would surrender portions of their sovereignty. Sometimes they use the word mutualized, but I mean, they actually surrender certain portions, the foreign affairs, defense, monetary, all of these positions, of course, military, so we have a strong military, but you surrender these particular portions of your sovereignty, and then the rest, what the states don't surrender, they continue to keep.
Well, you know, I like to look at it like this. I believe that you're surrendering your being co-opted and possibly being co-opted for sovereignty, because what the Pan-African Federalist Movement is advocating for a sovereign African continent where brothers and sisters on the continent, number one, recognize their Africanness as one and work towards achieving the goal of being sovereign to you know, just all those principles that we just mentioned, to do for ourselves. And so therefore, all those manipulators, all those people who come into the continent, you know, trying to rip us off, that ain't happening no more. You know, also too, when we make this move, we got to defend that. So we got to have an army. I agree. You know,
absolutely. See, what's happening right now is that we talked about flag independence, and the African nations are involuntarily giving up pieces of their sovereignty. I understand. I think a country in Zambia where the country became so in debt that now China owns part of their ports.
We're
involuntarily giving up parts of our sovereignty. Here we'd be voluntarily coming into a African Union, and we'd be mutualizing in a way those portions of sovereignty I just mentioned, so that we can become stronger as a group and be able to protect each of the states than they could do right now.
And that's the point, because, you know, when at the Berlin Conference of 1884-85, when they carved up Africa like a piece of cake and carved this out and carved that out, that's what you see on a political map. Those boundaries are not ours, you know. They are not ours. And so what needs to happen is we need to restructure all of that. And also, too, I mean, if make a decision based upon what's right. If a country who has been in Africa exploiting Africans needs to be repaid for something or not, then kick them to the curb. Because the bottom line is they got what they have gotten from Africa. There's probably no doubt about that. We don't need to be. They need to be paying us, because, like I said, once we become strong, we'll get reparations. Let me get Brother Ted. Ted Lusk, are you there?
Yes, I'm here real quick.
Sure.
You know, sometimes when we use the English language, it surfaces different kinds and types of images. For example, when one says the word cost, it could image in someone's mind about dollars and cents. My question to you, Baba Imsada, is this. How much do you think it costs for us to practice the principles that we're in right now with regards to Kuji Chakulia, Kaumba, Nia, Imani, etc.? How much do you think that it costs in terms of opportunity, in terms of emotional or social? How much would it, you think, that would cost us as a people?
They practice the principles of Kwanzaa, Moja, Kuji, Chagalia, Ujamaa, Ujima, Ujamaa, Nia, Kumba, Amani, faith. What it costs basically is making a commitment to study those principles, to live by those principles. One of our sisters, Ayoka, they celebrate Kwanzaa 365 days a year. I'm always saying Habari Gani to her, because Habari Gani in Swahili means what's happening or what's the news. And, you know, I learned that back in years ago when we were going to do a campus newspaper, we were going to name it Habari Gani. But that's Swahili uh-huh. for that. But during Kwanzaa, the appropriate response is the day of the week. Like today, Habari Gani's response is Kuji Chagalia. But when I talk to Sister Ayoka, regardless of the time, I say Habari Gani. I'm thinking, but it's news, and she respond back what the principle is, because she calculates it at 365 days of Kwanzaa, so she always has the day, you know, in front of her head. But what it costs us basically is a commitment to study these principles, to live by these principles, to apply these principles to your practical life. And so that's basically the cost. There's no financial cost involved, but your life will be enriched. And with Umoja, I'm Pan-African Fellows Global Movement is about continental and global Umoja, global unity, political unity. I gave a keynote address on Kwanzaa back in 2011, and it's an appendix in my book, New Pan-Africanism 2020. But I dealt with Umoja as from a continental and global perspective, and how critical it is for us to move toward the United African States. And but in terms of direct answer to your question, in terms of cost, I think it costs a commitment to study and live by these principles 365 days a year, every day. I think that's
Asante Sana Msada. Thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Ted. All right. You know, brother, we're pushing to make this happen before this decade is out, and that's what needs to happen. We can't procrastinate. We got to do it in the steps that it needs to be done, and for those who are given assignment, they need to be adhered to. There needs to be that kind of follow-up and so forth, because the way that the European Urugu, Caucasian, the cracker, the Urugu operates, you know, he don't give a damn. He don't give a damn even about them, you know, because when you see that the world has created a series of individuals who have massive amounts of wealth at the expense of other human beings, That becomes mm-hmm. a very tenuous position for humanity, you know? So the mm-hmm. greed of the European, you know, it is going to be checked because of what we're going to do with the continent of Africa, bringing it into prominence in terms of us as African people running it, not people getting looking to be millionaires and wealthy, but sharing in it. Because one of the things of Kwanzaa is the first fruits of the harvest. That's what Kwanzaa means, the first that you share. It's not that you are so selfish and so greedy that you gotta take most of it for yourself and then parcel out some crumbs here or there, or even make somebody buy them, you know. It's a shame, mm-hmm. man. In this world that we live in, and, you know, it's a shame. And here you have South African Elon Musk advising Trump about programs that need to be cut. And here this man has made double. He is truly the richest man in the world now with over $400 billion. And he got that because of his association. And of course, I'm quite sure Trump is getting kickback association with the Republican Party, and they're sent to the White House. Mm-hmm. And all those things that are going to happen. You know, we have to, as I said earlier, in the first half of the program, the Exodus in the Bible, in the Old Testament, did not happen. It's not a historical. Nothing in the Bible basically is truly historical. You could say that it is, and that's fine. But that did not happen historically. But it must happen realistically for us as African people. We must have an Exodus because, number one, wherever we are, we're at the bottom. We're at the bottom of the economic ladder, so to speak. We are shunned. We are disrespected. We are marginalized. You name it. You know, in this society, every social ill in this society is more profound in us than anybody else. You name it. Education, health, jobs, whatever. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's not going to change by us begging. It's not. It's only going to change because we made a change. You know, we made the change. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to find a quote by Malcolm, and he talked about, you know, we all need to return to African or Pan-African perspective spiritually, even if we stay here locally in America. But the Constitution of the United African States, one of the things that we must insist on is coming from the North America is that the Constitution gives us a right to return, that all Africans in the diaspora have a right to return to the continent. Bear in mind, again, that that we didn't come here voluntarily, that we were kidnapped, forced migrated, and then enslaved. So we have a right to, and we never surrendered our sovereignty here, in this, but we have a right to return. That has to be guaranteed. Also, understand that that Africans have just as much claim on North America and the United States as any other people, if not more so. I mean, we were it's well documented that Africans were in North America long before Columbus, and that within the context of the United States, we've shed blood from Crispus Attucks to my uncle and my father in World War II. So we have every right to be here. And we're not talking about surrendering any of those rights at all. What we're talking about is understanding that we are also part of a global African nation. It's not an either or, it's part of a global African nation. And as I talked about earlier, that we are in fact a nation within a nation socially and culturally as we speak. Eventually, we want to get some degree of political recognition for that fact. But we need to have a right to return for all Africans. If that's what you want to do, you have to be able to go there and have a right to be there, with undisputed. And then also we need to strengthen wherever African people are. The global African nation will strengthen us wherever we are in terms of dealing with all sorts of issues, whether they be police brutality. It's the difference when a government of 1.5 billion people are talking to the government of the United States about police brutality. It's a whole different deal.
I agree. And I think that's what's important. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Also, psychologically, my daughter is 19 years old. When she was 3 years old, I took her in the booth to vote with me, and she carved in Obama's name. And then she doesn't remember that, but she does remember doing it when she was 12. So in the back of her mind is that more the psychological thing, rather than his policies, so you could argue about the fact that it was a black man in this powerful office. That's at the foundation of her being. The existence of a strong and powerful Africa will redefine how African people throughout the world look at themselves. It will suddenly become a hip thing to be African, and to really be proud of who we are as a people. So there's a psychological impact that immediately takes place once Africa reemerges as a world power. So anyway, you have some more questions, and I have some more things I want to say, but I'm gonna wait until.
Okay. Well, we only have a few more minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you got something, you know, I was just gonna say though, is that, us claiming wherever we are, wherever we were dropped off at, and we've been there for hundreds of years, and us claiming that, we've worked the land, we did this, we did that, but yet we don't own it. It's not ours. And those who brought us to that particular point never intended to share it with us equitably. They never had that intent. And so that being the case, the only place that we can go on this continent, on this planet, the only place that we can go on this planet is Africa. And anybody else can't say a damn thing. We should be able to go to Africa and tell the North Africa, and tell the Arabs in North Africa, in Egypt, Algeria, Libya. You've seen what they did in Libya. You see, there was, Muammar, and I got some problems and issues with Muammar Gaddafi. I understand that. But to me, there was no better friend to Africa than Muammar Gaddafi at one point. And what he did for the people of Libya, the lies that were told by Barack Obama and others to cause him to be assassinated. Because why? He wanted Africa to understand its value and its power and to use a currency. To use a currency. And once that happened, the European countries, England and so forth, and the United States, they put out a disinformation piece on him. So justifying his murder, justifying his assassination. And that's what they do. What do you think of this, what's going on in Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger? What do you think? I love it.
Interesting. That was part of what I wanted to talk about.
Oh, okay.
Briefly.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. I'm trying to get a grip on what you were saying right before that.
Okay.
Okay. The movement is a grounds up movement. Which means the masses of African people, where the sovereignty really belongs to the people, ultimately. If you look at the charter of the Organization of African States, the charter of the African Union, which succeeded the Organization of African Unity, the charter says we, the heads of states of Africa. So it's an organization of heads of states. But the Constitution of the United African States has to say we the people of Africa, of the world, people of the world. And that's the one that needs to guarantee us the right to return, absolutely. And also protect us wherever we are in the world at the same time, and guarantee and back up anything we want to say and demand. The fact that they didn't plan for us to be part of it doesn't negate the fact that we are in fact here, and we do in fact have rights as African people. But the most important thing is our right to return, as you mentioned in that. Mm-hmm. Now, the movement toward a constitution for the United African States, toward referendums that need to take place across the African continent, coming from the masses of the people who own this real sovereignty, is basically like a bottoms up movement, and it's going to be basically changing the body politic within these various states. Remember, the heads of states aren't necessarily interested in becoming governors. They like being a big fish in a small pool. So it's going to be the people underneath them that's going to make the movement. It's going to change the body politic and demand that the states become part of the African Union, or that the United African States. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some bright spots, I would say, potential bright spots on the continent. There was recently an election in Senegal where a brother, Bubba Jomé Faye, who happens to be the godson and nephew of the Secretary General of the Pan-African Fellows Movement.
I
think it was so his namesake. That was a positive thing. And, of course, we have a relationship with that. Ghana just had an election, and a brother by the name of Mohammed took over, is going to be taken over. He seems to be more progressive than the government that he's replacing, and he's making some relationship with the Sahel states. The Sahel states are Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso. Some of the things that they're talking about, and those are young people, are positive. So we might be able to build on these might be some African states who will go as the Constitution of Ghana originally said, that they were willing to surrender the sovereignty of Ghana to a larger entity. So hopefully, if they're able to see this bigger picture, and the fact that the Sahel states wanted to they started off by pushing the French out, and then uniting around around their best interests, and that's a step in the right direction. So we need to build on those positive things.
Well,
another thing you mentioned, this reminds me of what you were saying about the critical necessity. I mentioned that the federal government will take over foreign affairs, so you don't have all these embassies. You have one embassy from the United African States, and it's a combined global foreign affairs. The military affairs, which is obvious in terms of consolidating the military, so we have a strong African military. But the monetary affairs are also critical. The fact that we're talking about a single African currency, Kwame Nkrumah was talking about it, but once the United African States comes into political existence, you have a single African currency. That means you could travel from one place to another in Africa. I remember when I was in Senegal in 1995, and we made a stop off at an IV in Cote d'Ivoire, and there was a bunch of things being sold. But all I had was CDs, Ghanaian CDs and American dollars, and they couldn't trade in the local thing. So I couldn't buy them, so that local economy lost, and I didn't get what I wanted. And there was a bunch of American Africans on there who would have been able to trade. If there was a single African currency, all of that would have taken place. It would have been a win-win, just on a small scale. Yeah. But also, you bear in mind that all of the resources, I mean, the rest of the world can't survive without Africa, but Africa could survive without the rest of the world. Our currency would be based on the riches and the gold that's in abundance in Africa.
Yes.
So it would become a very strong currency, stronger than this stuff that's going on with BRICS, stronger than, even the American dollar in terms of potential. So that's going to be a critical element, having a universal African currency. You know, I could go on and on. Eventually, we want to have a universal African language, but go ahead.
I propose that it be Swahili, because most people could speak Swahili. We need to have a language that we can have cultural privacy in, you know. But the bottom line is,
Swahili is the most widely
spoken language.
African language. Mm-hmm. But bear in mind, it comes out of East Africa. And Karanga, when he chose Swahili for Kwanzaa, and those principles are in Swahili, you know, Moja, Kuji, Chagalia, those are Swahili. But he chose it when he was working on his PhD because it was widely spoken and it's non-tribal in East Africa. And since then, it's become more widely spoken. But I think when you're talking about a continental African language, you'd probably be a commission put together similar to what Diop was talking about. Mm-hmm. And we probably want to look at that commission. We'd want to look at across the board to all African languages and look to ancient Egypt, Kemet, to some of the words that come out of that language that are now in Wolof and other languages, and develop a continental language that is drawing from all of these various aspects and is able to deal with scientific concepts like the theory of relativity, et cetera. And that's going to be like a project. And then by the middle of the decade, by the middle of the century, once the United African States, hopefully the project will be done. And you start off with the younger people, like in kindergarten, start teaching them the language. And by the end of the century, we all speak in the same continental African language. But it's going to be a work. But in the meantime, Swahili is like the placeholder.
Exactly. That's the point. I agree with you. We've run out of time. What is that? What's your email address? So I can send you that information.
United Africa 2020 at AOL.com.
Is that Africa with a K? Is that Africa with a K or a C?
No, with the A, with the C. United Africa 2020 at AOL.com. Africa with the AFRICA 2020, but it's one word, United Africa 2020, lowercase, at AOL.com. And I don't want people to forget again the website, which I gave you earlier, which is, again, it's www.pafm. That's
right.
P is in Paul, A is in Africa, F is in Frank, M is in Mary, - North America, and again with the C.org. And I encourage you to go to the website, and you could see a number of things dealing with the Pan-African Federalist Movement. And Asante Sana, Brother Oshi, for having me and for allowing me to talk about the Pan-African Federalist Movement. It's very dear to my heart. I've been a coordinator since the founding of the movement in 2015, which was a year or so after my book came out, The United Africa, United Africa, The New Pan-Africanism 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have a vision. Leadership is defined, it's a leadership organization in a way. And leadership is defined by someone has to have a vision, but there's a lot of people who go to the grave with the vision. You have to be able to galvanize people around the vision. So in other words, other people have to share your vision.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the Pan-African Federalist Movement needs to share the vision of bringing the United African States into political existence so we can see it. And finally, the third element of leadership, and I taught leadership, as I said, my last professional job, leadership in the Black community. But the third element, and most critical, is being able to galvanize the resources, human and financial, to bring that vision into physical reality.
I say.
And so those are the three elements: a vision, get other people to share the vision, and to be able to galvanize the resources, human and financial, to bring that vision into reality. And that's what the Pan-African Federalist Movement is trying to do. So thank you, Brother Oshi, for inviting me. And thank you for your support that you've given the Pan-African Federalist Movement over the years. I first met you at the convention in 2018 that we had. So
is that what it was? So thank 2018? You for that. Oh, man, in D.C.? Right on, yes. My brother. I appreciate it. And we'd love to have members of the Pan-African Federalist Movement on this program, you know, at least once a month, you, Brother Sam, Mama Nabantu, and others to come on and talk about what's happening, what's going to happen, what you're planning to make happen, you know, get that information out there. Because one thing I understand and understand clearly is that we need Africa. We need Africa. Africans need Africa. And it needs to be free and where we can all live and love freely in. And so the idea of the Pan-African Federalism, I gravitated to it right away because I'm a Pan-Africanist. You know, I'm serious about it. So, all right, dear brother.
And now you're Pan-African Federalist.
That's right.
The coordinator for the National Coordinating Committee for the United States and the Coordinating Committee for National Coordinating Committee for Canada, those also may be two good people to bring on the show and be initiating some of that. And there's going to be some strong initiatives at that level.
Okay, yeah, well, give me the information about that, and I will do that. I emailed you the information from a brother, Mickey Dean, at a National Black United Front, talking about why does the West keep Africa poor? And it's about an hour-long hour-long interview with the African sister, kept from Tunisia, but it's very good information, you know.
Sante Sana.
All right, dear brother. Peace to you. All right. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodie. Abibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a great weekend. Enjoy Kwanzaa, whatever you do at someone's home or in a community event. Enjoy Kwanzaa, family. Peace to you.